have all of you along. I do appreciate it very much. Appreciate your calls and your emails and your contributions to the show. Don't forget that. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you, gang.
This is the Quality News Network. The House of Representatives was unable to override President Bush's veto of the bill that would have expanded the child health insurance program. The vote was 273 to 156, which was 13 votes shy of the two-thirds necessary to override the veto. President Bush's nominee for Attorney General Michael Mukasey continued his testimony at the Senate Judiciary confirmation hearings. There were some heated exchanges between the nominee and some Democratic senators over the controversial terror interrogation technique known as waterboarding. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto returned back to her country today after 8 years in exile. She was unhurt when two explosions occurred near the truck she was riding in. She was greeted by a crowd of thousands of supporters. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert met with Russian President Vladimir Putin in a previously unannounced trip to Moscow. They discussed Iran's nuclear program. Putin just returned from a trip to Tehran, where he vowed to support Iran's pursuit of a nuclear program. China's foreign ministry warned the United States today that Wednesday's awarding of the Congressional Medal of Honor to the Dalai Lama, quote, gravely undermined relations between the two countries. In northern Iraq, thousands of Kurds marched in the city of Erbil. They are calling for peaceful dialogue with Turkey a day after the Turkish parliament overwhelmingly approved authorization of a military incursion into northern Iraq to counter Kurdish rebels. Republican Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas will drop out of the 2008 presidential race tomorrow. He's expected to make the announcement Friday in Topeka. Former Republican House Speaker Dennis Hassert will vacate his House seat soon before his term is over in January 2009, according to a report by the Associated Press. Earlier this year, he announced that he would not run for re-election. French President Nicolas Sarkozy's office announced he and his wife are divorcing. It was a mutual decision to end the 11-year marriage. Former Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Navy Admiral William Crowe died last night. He was 82 years old. He also served as ambassador to Great Britain. Actress Deborah Carr has died in England at the age of 86. And comedian Joey Bishop, known for being a member of the Rat Pack, has died at his California home. He was 89 years old. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business. Next.
It won't be long before every business and most individuals will have their own website. Whether they are looking for new clients or posting information of use to their colleagues, the website makes printing brochures and price sheets, press releases, and community notices virtually obsolete. With your own website, you can provide the latest information as it becomes available on new products and services, special offers, and company news. You no longer have to stare at errors or out-of-date information that was printed up in bulk. For organizations, you can bring your message to the public, just as you are knitting tighter relations with your supporters and staff. The people who can make all of that possible are at Byte Technology. Find out more. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178. Byte Technology, 656-9178.
Early this morning, storms across the Midwest killed two people and injured 35. Some of the worst weather was in Missouri and Oklahoma. Also in the Florida Panhandle, a tornado reportedly touched down. The head of the FCC may plan to ease the rules on media ownership. One of the possible changes would be a repeal of the rule which forbids media companies to own both a newspaper and a television or radio station in the same market. The Labor Department reports that last week, jobless claims jumped up 28,000 to a total of 337,000 applications. That was the largest one-week increase since February and more than analysts had expected. A major strike in France has shut down bus, train, and subway services across the country. The showdown between the country's unions and its new president is over France's pension system. The dollar has dropped to a new low in trading against the euro today. And Bank of America reports its third quarter earnings were down by 32%. Gold is trading at $768.70 an ounce. Light sweet crude is in record territory, $89.47 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is down 5 points at 13,887. The NASDAQ up 7 and the S&P 500 down 1. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Gramov.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America, and welcome to the Inside Scoop. I have always been a strong supporter of the State of Israel. That doesn't mean I agree with everything the Israeli government does. That would be silly. I don't agree with everything my country's government does, and I certainly don't agree with everything the Israeli government does. But when it comes to the existence of a free, independent Jewish state within secure boundaries as a homeland for the Jewish people, count me in. I am definitely a Zionist. And it's not only Jews that are Zionists. Many Americans support the existence of the State of Israel, again, maybe disagreeing with some of its policies, but many Americans support the existence of a beleaguered democracy that is surrounded by enemies that seek to destroy it. It is an unfortunate fact that the Arabs with the most rights in the Middle East happen to live in the State of Israel. There is a newer group on the horizon, one that's always been supportive of Israel, but it's just now that it's becoming a political player, and that is evangelical Christians. And my guest today, Dr. James Hutchins, is the regional director of Christians United for Israel, whose founder and national chairman is Pastor John Hagee, of whom there's been some controversy. And the controversy comes to play as to who are these people and why do they support the State of Israel. And it's already said on Capitol Hill that they may have more power and more clout than the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC, which has been supporting Israel for a long time. Dr. Jim Hutchins, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, it's good to be with you.
It's very good to have you here and to really give a chance to let my listeners know who you are, who your organization is, and why you folks support Israel. So why do you?
Well, our support for Israel is not based on the geopolitics of the area, as they may come and go, whatever that may be. But it's based more on what the Scripture says. We are Christian Zionists. And by Christian Zionist, I mean we support the modern state of Israel as a partial fulfillment of what God has promised by covenant regarding a national homeland for the Jewish people. I say a partial fulfillment. It's not the ultimate fulfillment. There are other things that will take place. But we are gathered together under Christians United for Israel. Dr. Hagee is our national director. We have three stated purposes. One is that we would come to Washington every year that's been in July the last 2 years, and we would advocate on behalf of Israel regarding issues that are relevant to Israel. I should say the mission of Christians United for Israel is to support Israel in matters related to biblical issues. Now, there are obviously some carryover into political issues, but the basis of those are that we find in the Bible. The second thing that regarding a purpose is that we would have a night to honor Israel, there are over 60 of those that have taken place since the organization began throughout the country. We had one in Alexandria, Virginia on May 20th. Just last Sunday on the 14th of October, Dr. Hagee conducted the National Night to Honor Israel in San Antonio and gave out over $8 million to various organizations and agencies in Israel.
Such as what? I'm just curious. I'll get you a third point in a second. Well, what kinds of agencies in Israel?
Well, McDonald's.
Charitable organizations or other things?
I'm sorry?
Are they charitable organizations or other things?
Well, they're charitable organizations. $1 million was given to Nefesh B'Nefesh, for example. They are very much involved in bringing Jewish people back to the back to Israel, helping them perform Aliyah. Okay. $3 million was given to Migdal Or. It's a youth organization in the north of Israel that deals with abused children and orphan children in many cases. But
your third point was what you said.
Third point was we provide a rapid response mechanism. Each Monday, Dr. Hagee sends out an e-newsletter to us. Sometimes we have an action alert on it. And if it's a hot issue, we will get that out to the various organizations that are represented in Christians United for Israel, and we will advocate on behalf of some issue. We would ask that we contact the president or contact our elected officials with our point of view on this.
Now, there have always been strong support in a lot of the Christian community in America for the State of Israel. Why do you think this kind of organized political support from your organization, which really is the first major one, why is that so recent, in your view?
Well, I think it was for such a time as this. I think Dr. Hagee has been a Christian Zionist for 25 years, but he has the national stature and the visibility. And on February of 2006, he called some 400 of us Christian Zionist leaders to invite us to come to San Antonio, and we talked about organizing under Christians United for Israel so that we could have one voice regarding issues that relate to Israel. I should tell you that the purpose that we have organized under, the mission statement that we've organized under, as I mentioned, is to support Israel in matters related to biblical issues.
Well, that's not exactly what I was going to ask you about. What are biblical issues in your view?
Well, I think one that's hot today is the giving up of Judea and Samaria and the division of Jerusalem. That's a galvanizing issue for us.
And you're opposed to that?
We're opposed to that. And we're opposed to it on the basis of the scriptures. As I say, there are some overlapping issues that are political, but this is obviously political, but it's based in a biblical commitment.
Now, I I'm pretty familiar with the Bible, and I know that the borders of Judea and Samaria changed throughout ancient Israeli history. At one time, they were quite small, actually. I'm thinking after the Assyrian invasion, there was just Judea, and it was a very small territory, pretty much centered around Jerusalem. At other times, under King David, the territory was so large that it would include today what would be not only Israel, West Bank, and Gaza, but today it would also be Jordan and Syria and Lebanon. Where do you think that Israel cannot give up the territories in a biblical sense? I mean, King David's maximum kingdom or the very minimum kingdom of the Jews right before the Babylonian exile?
Well, I think that, for example, in Genesis chapter 15, it's God says, I will make a covenant. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram. To your descendants, I give the land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates.
Now, the river of Egypt, that's the El Arish in the Sinai, right?
Well, there's some debate as to what that is. Some people believe it's the Nile. Some believe it is El Arish. But the Euphrates is very clear. And he says that, and then he talks about the land that its occupants are at that time. Now, I think Israel's not holding out for land all the way to the Euphrates. I mean, that goes...
Well, but that's my question. I mean, if it's biblically based, then it would seem to me, and if you're basing it on that quote in Genesis to Abraham...
Yeah.
I mean, El Arish isn't so far from Israel's modern boundaries, so let's even assuming it's El Arish and not the Nile, which would be a far more grave invasion. But even if it's El Arish, that's not so far from Israel's boundaries. But Euphrates is quite far and would include what is all of Syria and Jordan and even part of Iraq.
Right.
Are you advocating Israel actually invade these countries?
No, I'm not advocating that at all. What we're advocating for is really the heartland. And that's what most Israel, I say most, that's what the Israelis that we are in agreement with are advocating as well. And the heartland includes Judea and Samaria, east or west of the Jordan.
Well, I mean, actually, again, it sort of depends on how you define it. I mean, as I'm also aware in the Bible, the promise to Abraham is the largest promise. There is the King David's kingdom, which would include pretty much all of that promise. But there were times when Judea was literally maybe 50 miles around Jerusalem, and that was all they had. The rest was conquered. I mean, if it were a question about Jerusalem, you know, that's something that I can see is you know, there was always Jerusalem in every Jewish kingdom under the Bible. But you know, some of the more flung boundaries. I mean, for example, Gaza. Gaza is not particularly important in the Bible. It was mostly held by Philistines for most of Jewish history. David did conquer them, but that was a very small point. Why can't Israel give up Gaza, which isn't particularly at the heart of Judea and Samaria under the Bible?
It's not at the heart, but it is included in that. Gaza is mentioned as by name as being included in the Promised Land. But I think it's not only is it included in the Promised Land and part of the covenant that God has given, but I think it's been a disaster to give it up. I think any rational person would take a look at what has happened in Gaza since Israel moved out and realize that it was a wrong move.
Yeah, well, Gaza's a mess. I mean, Hamas is brutally treating the people there, but I just want to be clear, that's a geopolitical question, not a biblical question.
Well, right? It is a biblical question, but it has political overtones. I think the term and the place, the geographical location of Gaza is included in the Promised Land.
Well, but wouldn't Syria also be included? And Jordan, certainly. I mean, there were many tribes that were east of the Jordan River. The initial description of Palestine in 1917 included all of Jordan, too.
Exactly. And I believe, and we do believe, that at some point it will be actually occupied. It will be a part of the land of Israel.
You think that the modern state of Israel will at some point take over lands that are currently in Jordan and Syria and Lebanon?
I don't know about the modern state of Israel. I don't know about. I just don't have a view for that. All I know is what the scripture says. I don't have a timetable for when that's going to take place.
Let me ask you something else. You said biblical issues, and we talked about territory. Are there other biblical issues other than territory that you concentrate on at Kufi?
At this point, it's primarily that. We have, Dr. Hagee's made statements about Iran and the necessity of not taking the military option off the table for Iran, but that's not directly related to a biblical issue, I don't think, at this point. I think it's realistic to expect that Iran is going to do what they say they're going to do if they're allowed to do it.
I mean, okay, so that's more of a geopolitical issue. That's more of you fear that Iran is a threat to Israel, and therefore... Now, let me ask you, when you say that Jews going back to Israel, you said it's part of the ultimate fulfillment, but not the complete ultimate fulfillment. What did you mean by that?
Well, Ezekiel says, for example, in Ezekiel chapter 36, he talks about the scattering, the dispersion of the Jewish people, and why he does that. Or why he did it, actually. But then he says that I will bring them back. And we're experiencing. As a matter of fact, the language that is used there is very vivid. He speaks of, he says, for example, I'm going to, in Ezekiel 36, therefore say to the house of Israel, this is what the sovereign Lord says. It is not for your sake, O house of Israel, that I'm going to do these things, but for the sake of my holy name, which you have profaned among the nations where you've gone. He said, I'm going to bring you back. I will take you, verse 24, I will take you out of the nations. I will gather you from all the countries and bring you back into your own land. Says, I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you'll be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols. I'll give you a new heart, put a new spirit in you. I'll remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. I'll put my spirit in you, move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. You'll live in the land and I gave your forefathers. You'll be my people and I'll be your God. Now, that's not happened yet.
It's happened, I mean, arguably twice. I mean, once in after the Babylonian exile when they rebuilt the Second Temple, and then the other time would be the modern state of Israel.
Well, the return has taken place, but that's why we say it's a partial fulfillment, because he says there's going to be a spiritual renewal that the people experience. That's not happened. I mean, Israel is a secular state. It's run by seculars.
So you think Israel should be a theocratic state?
I think it,
I mean, right now, under Israeli law, there are certainly all religions are free to practice, Orthodox Jews, as well as certainly Christians and Muslims and so forth. Yes, maybe 75% of the people don't practice, they're Jews, but they don't practice their religion very much. But certainly people are practicing religion in the state of Israel.
Well, he's not talking about just practicing religion. He says, I'll cleanse you from your impurities and your idols. I will give you a new heart. I'll put a new spirit in you. I'll remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. That's not happened. It didn't happen from the Babylonian captivity, nor has it happened since Israel's become a state. There is a great spiritual renewal that will take place in Israel. Now, scriptures indicate that comes at a great price, because there is a... It's going to get worse before it gets better, as I...
Well, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Your view, that's based primarily on the book of Revelations, right?
No. It's not based on the book of Revelations. That gives some details on it. But Zechariah, the prophet Zechariah, is very clear as to about what's going to happen. I mean, and of course, all the prophets spoke of a remnant. But, for example, he says in Zechariah chapter 8, chapter 13, in the whole land, declares the Lord, two-thirds will be struck down and perish, and yet one-third will be left in it. And this third I will bring into the fire. I will refine them like silver and test them like gold. And they will call on my name, and I will answer them, and I will say, they are my people, and they will say, the Lord is our God.
Okay. You know, of course, that's happened several times in Jewish history, from the destruction of the Romans to arguably the Holocaust. There have been massive amounts of Jews that have been slaughtered, but a remnant has remained. So that has happened several times in Jewish history.
That has happened several times. But when you read Zechariah chapter 12 through 14, you have a reference time and time again. I think I counted, 17 times where it refers to in that day. And it speaks of a time when all the nations, matter of fact, Zechariah says this. He says in chapter 12, I'm going to make Jerusalem a cup that sends all the surrounding peoples reeling. Judah will be besieged as well as Jerusalem on that day when all the nations of the earth are gathered against her. I will make Jerusalem an immovable rock, for all the nations who try to move it will be injured. On that day, I will make the leaders of Judah like a firepot and a woodpile, like a flaming torch among sheaves. They will consume right and left all the surrounding peoples, but Jerusalem will remain intact in her place. Now, that's never happened before. All the nations...
There's all kinds of prophecies. There's certainly many Jewish prophecies that foretell the coming of the Messiah. There are many Christian prophecies that talk about the second coming of Jesus.
Yeah.
What, in your view, is the connection between Christian support for Israel and the second coming of Jesus?
Well, I know there's been a lot said about that, but the support for Israel is not based upon the second coming of Jesus.
It's not.
No, absolutely not. It is based. Where do we get this idea of the support for Israel? We get it from the Hebrew Scriptures. Where do we get the idea that things are going to get worse before they get better? We get it from the Hebrew Scriptures. We get it from...
So this isn't from Revelations. This isn't from the New Testament, in your view.
Well, the Revelation confirms it and gives some additional details. But the heart of this is from the prophet, the Hebrew prophets.
Does your group and I don't know whether... Are you a Southern Baptist? Is that your denomination?
No,
or I don't know.
I'm a Presbyterian.
You're Presbyterian, okay. And so you have many denominations in your group, Christian United.
We do, and I think that's strongly in favor of the group. There are no doctrinal requirements to be a member of CUFI.
Okay.
I think that's important to note. There are no doctrinal. So everybody's not in agreement doctrinally on all 18, but we're agreement on the mission, and the mission is to support Israel in matters related to biblical issues.
What I'm trying to figure out is there are evangelical groups, some of whom have been connected with I don't want to say Pastor Haig, I mean possibly with him, but certainly there are groups that support Israel, that believe that Jews all over the world really need to go to Israel, including American Jews, including Jews elsewhere, and that when all the Jews come back to Israel, then Jesus will have a second coming. Did I get that right, or do you think that
no, I hear that from Jews very frequently, but
that's not your understanding.
No,
that's
not my understanding
doctrine.
Of what the Scripture said. We support Israel not on the basis of the second coming of Jesus, but we support Israel on the basis of the covenants that God has made with Israel and the Jewish people. These are inviolable covenants; they are valid today.
I'd be curious to know whether you support the Jewish people apart from Israel. For example, do you consider there is a Christian obligation? It didn't happen, but do you consider there'd be a Christian obligation to help Jews during a Holocaust period outside of the land of Israel? Or is this
absolutely.
A specific... There is. Okay, it's not...
Absolutely.
So you believe in the existence of the Jewish people, not just the state of Israel.
That's right. As a matter of fact, I consider us in the lineage of Ruth, who said, who was a non-Jew, who said, your people will be my people, your God will be my God, where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. I think we are in that lineage, and I think you'll find that some of the Christian Zionists were the ones who stepped up during the Second World War. And were the ones who
there were a few
shelter.
Definitely.
I'm sorry.
There were some. There were definitely some righteous Gentiles. They're honored in Israel today. They were the minority, but there were definitely some, and those were incredibly honorable, courageous people. My concern is when I hear someone, and I admit that, you know, I have little respect for her. I don't know whether you do or not, but when I hear someone like Ann Coulter talk about perfected Jews, that's something that scares the Jewish community. Let's face it.
Well. Yeah, she's you have to realize that's the way that woman makes a living. I mean,
well, I understand that, and it's not about her. I have no respect for her. But in general, to what extent is Christian support for Israel? And this is a concern among Jews and among secular Americans and so forth, that it's really all about trying to convert the Jews to Christianity, that it's all about perfecting Jews in that way.
Let me be very candid with you. I'm a Christian. I'm a satisfied Christian. I'm a strong believer. I wish that everybody were Christians. Jews, Hindus, Buddhists. I wish everybody was a Christian. But that's not my goal. That's not my calling. And I believe that what I'm supposed to do within the confines of Christians United for Israel and our own organization, the Jerusalem Connection, is to, and I would tell you the mission statement for our organization, the Jerusalem Connection, is to inform, to educate, and to activate support for Israel and the Jewish people. That's my DNA. But
I guess my question is, in your DNA, and I know that Pastor Haig has written a lot about the end of times, and you know the apocalypse and revelations and. And my understanding is, and again, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is the idea is that when all the Jews go back to Israel, there'll be a great war, and then Jesus will return, and at that point, all the unsaved Jews go to hell or get slaughtered. Is that not part of dominionist theology, part of the theology of many of your supporters?
I can't speak for all the supporters, but I can say that... we believe that Jesus is the Messiah. He's the Jewish Messiah. We believe that he's the promised Messiah of whom Moses and the prophets spoke. And we believe that there is a day coming when Jews and the world will recognize that he is indeed the Messiah.
And look, you know, if Jesus comes and all the people recognize him, that's fine. But my question is, the passages that talk about those that don't accept Jesus and the idea that unsaved, and not just Jews, but anyone of any religion that doesn't accept Jesus will be slaughtered. Now, you know, if it's God's angel doing it, that, you know, no. But it, my concern is that human beings are going to see those kinds of passages and act upon them. I'll just be very frank with you.
Act in what way? What do you mean?
Well, my concern is if those passages are indeed what you or at least what a number of members of your organization believe in, my concern is that an unstable person might see Jesus return in some fashion that's maybe clear to that person but not clear to all of humanity, and start taking action to slaughter the unsaved.
Yeah. Well, that could very well happen, but that's not part of the biblical plan. Now, and the prophets speak of this, that there will only be a remnant. And you know this as well. All of them speak of this. There's a remnant that will be saved. There's only a remnant of the Gentiles will be saved.
What happens to the others?
Well, evidently, when the Messiah comes, there is much of the world that at that point, at that very point in time, every eye sees him, and he becomes King of Kings and Lord of Lords. But at that point, everybody doesn't believe in him as we believe in him. And then what happens? The world is populated after he comes. There's been a massive destruction. Now, I think there's some details that the book of Revelation gives at that point. It says an army coming from the Euphrates will destroy a third of mankind.
Now, an army coming from the Euphrates.
Euphrates, yeah.
So who do you think is that army? What are we talking about here?
I don't know who that would be. I think the one that has probably the most potential for that at this point would be a coalition of forces behind Iran. And I think, the president said just yesterday, if you want to avoid World War III, then be sure that Iran does not have nuclear capability.
I guess here's my basic question that I just want to get a real, real clear statement from you, and then I'm going to take a break and open up the phones because I know my listeners want to ask you some questions as well.
Sure.
But the fear is that because of this end of days theology, okay, because of this eschatology is the official word. I know you know what that means. My listeners may not. Eschatology is the study of the end of days and religious beliefs as to what will happen. It would include the apocalypse and revelations and really any other religion's belief in the end of days. The concern is that if it's taught at the end of days that those that do not accept Jesus will be slaughtered, the fear is that some may take that slaughter in their own hands. And I'd really like to hear a very strong statement from you, if you can give me one, saying that you and your supporters are very clear that's not an action that any of them should take.
That's not what?
That's not anything that they should do. They shouldn't be part of the army of the Euphrates.
Absolutely not. I mean that army is opposed to the Messiah. That army is opposed to God's people. That army that's released there, it's spoken of in Revelation chapter 9, and it says, where God says, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates, four angels who had been kept for this day, this hour, this month, to kill a third of mankind. The number of the mounted troops was 200 million. I heard their number. Now, that's some specifics that the book of Revelation gives, but the general outline of that is given to us in the prophets, in the Hebrew scriptures. And the sages have spoken of this, that there would be this great calamity, this great catastrophe that the world is heading for. And what we're
But you reject the idea that anyone should take the law into their own hands and punish people who are not saved.
Absolutely.
In any way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
All right.
And that's. But again, I want to make it clear.
Yeah.
That Cufi and Christian Zionists as a whole do not base their support on Israel on an end-time scenario that we don't know fully what's going to take place. We don't base it on the future. We base it on the past, upon what God has said as far as the covenants are concerned.
So let me be clear. Is supporting Israel an end of itself, or is it a means to an end?
It's
an end of itself. It's a good thing whether or not it causes an ingathering of the exiles or the second coming or the apocalypse or revelation or end of days. That's not the basis for your support.
It's support of Israel because God support for them recognizing that what Israel represents today is a partial fulfillment of God's covenant promise.
So I have to ask you, why does your leader, Pastor Hagee, concentrate so often on end of days eschatology? Are you saying that his support of Israel is totally separate from that discussion?
Well, if you would ask him, he would tell you that the primary reason that he supports Israel is just the reasons that I've given you. We've talked about this, and I am in total agreement with this. Some of the nuances of eschatology we may not be clear on, or maybe not be in agreement on, but we are totally in agreement on the fact that God has made a covenant, an inviolable covenant, a bond in blood, and that covenant will not be disputed, it will not be violated, it will be carried out, and it includes land promises. And so that's why we get very much involved with do not give up more land. Judea and Samaria.
I mean, you know where this can lead. I mean, if you go by Abraham's promise, you're talking about a wide swath of territory that even Israel doesn't claim to want. And extremely few people in Israel would argue that they need to start conquering Jordan and Syria and Lebanon. I doubt 1% would argue that.
No, that's for Israel to determine, and that's beyond our scope at this point. But it is within our realm of recognition that the geography that they're talking about today should remain in Israel's control. I think one of the, just as an aside to this, I think one of the most encouraging things that I've heard that has come out of this whole discussion is the possibility of reconsidering, it's been considered before, reconsidering Jordan as the Palestinian state. Yasser Arafat said it was. Prime Minister Sharon said that Jordan was the Palestine.
But what do you do with the Arabs that are living there?
Living where?
In Jordan. Much less in the West Bank and in Gaza.
70% of those are Palestinians,
right?
But
if you're, I'm not sure what you're saying. Are you saying Israel should extend its borders there?
That is, I think that's a much more realistic and comprehensive understanding. I tell you, the one who's done the hard due diligence on this, and that's Rabbi Benny Elon, who's a member of the Israeli Knesset, and he has had this since for the last 3 or 4 years, what he's called the right road to peace. Matter of fact, Senator Sam Brownback endorsed it. I just heard on your news there just before we came on.
Yeah, he's Brownback, getting out of the presidential race.
Yeah, he's going to step out, but he endorsed Benny Lone's roadmap to peace, the right initiative.
Dr. Hudgens, I want to take a quick break because I know that a lot of listeners are going to want to ask you a lot of questions. I want to give them the chance to do that. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366, or call 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Head-On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Wednesday night prayer meeting on Head On with Bob Kincaid opens up a whole new realm of spirituality. Touch others. Reach out and touch faith. Join Brother Bob every Wednesday night for prayer meeting services here in the Tabernacle of Common Sense. Only on the Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My guest is Dr. Jim Hutchins. He's the Regional Director of Christians United for Israel here in Washington, D.C., a group whose founder and national chairman is the pastor John Hagee. Dr. Hutchins, I'm reading the Wikipedia, and of course I realize that that can be wrong, which is why I'm asking the questions. But it says that John Hagee has denounced replacement theology or supersessionism. As you know, is the idea that basically God's relationship with the Jews ended when Jesus came, and you know Christians are the new Israel, and the old Israel has sort of lost its luster. Do you agree with the rejection of replacement theology?
Absolutely, absolutely. Christian Zionists are by definition non-supersessionists. I should say...
That's interesting. So there are none in your group that are supersessionists?
No.
Interesting.
Well, because a supersessionist believes that the covenants have been fulfilled in the church. The covenants with regard to Israel are now fulfilled in the church. As you said, the church is the new Israel. So by definition, a Christian Zionist who believes that the modern state of Israel is a partial fulfillment of God's covenant is not a supersessionist.
Is there a lot of disagreement, then, among evangelical Christians on this issue?
Yeah, there is disagreement. And I should say that recently, I think in July, there were some 30 evangelical leaders that wrote a letter to President Bush advocating support for the two-state solution, saying that we have to deal justly with the Palestinians and that they have as much right there as the Jews do. Basically, that's from a supersessionist position. A Christian Zionist could not write a letter like that.
Why not? I mean, it seems to me that those are two separate issues. One where you think that the Palestinian Arabs deserve rights is something that you can believe as a human being recognizes that people should have rights, totally apart from religion's sake.
Yeah, but the way that was couched in that letter to the president was that it drew a moral equivalence to the stand for land and the terrorism of Palestinian jihadists and what Israel has done to retaliate to protect its own citizens. There's just no moral equivalence there. My response to that is a very selective justice. That is not even-handed justice to draw.
But what does that have to do with supersessionism? I mean, supersessionism is a religious principle. Go ahead.
That would be that's an outgrowth of a supersessionist mentality, that the Palestinians have as much right to that land as the Jews do. They don't.
What would you say is and again, I don't know if there are any polls taken. Maybe there are polls taken. But among Christians, and we can talk about evangelical Christians or the larger Christian community, Catholics, Protestants, what those that believe in this supersessionist theology and those that believe that there's still an authentic relationship between God and the Jewish people.
And your question is?
Are there numbers on that? I mean, is it half and half?
Well,
do most?
Historically, the Catholic Church has been supersessionist. And the mainline Protestant denominations are supersessionist. What you see in the Christian Zionist is a grassroots level, groundswell of people who have gone to the Bible without any without a theological system imposed upon it, and they've taken the scriptures at face value, and they come out with this conclusion. They come out with the same conclusion that the Orthodox Jew does when he reads the Torah, and that's why we have common ground with so many of the Orthodox Jews. We read the same scriptures and we come out with the same conclusion.
I know, for example, Senator Lieberman has spoken at, I believe, at Kufi.
He has, yes.
But generally, you're more connected with the Republican Party. I mean, it seems to me that.
Thank you.
This is the Quality News Network. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto returned back to her country today after 8 years in exile. Two explosions occurred near the truck that was carrying her through a procession. She was unhurt. However, at least 51 people were killed and more than 150 were wounded. Earlier when she arrived, she was greeted by a crowd of thousands of supporters. She said, quote, "If we want to save Pakistan, we have to have democracy," end quote. President Bush's nominee for Attorney General Michael Mukasey continued his testimony at the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearings today. There were some heated exchanges between the nominee and some Democratic senators over the controversial terror interrogation technique known as waterboarding. The House of Representatives was unable to override President Bush's veto of the bill that would have expanded the child health insurance program. The vote was 273 to 156, which was 13 votes shy of the two-thirds necessary to override the veto. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert met with Russian President Vladimir